Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. Back in Studio A with my guest this morning, as I mentioned, to talk about the upcoming full-scale disaster drill set for San Juan County. The director of the San Juan County Office of Emergency Management, Mike Mestis, is joining me this morning. Mike, welcome back to KSJE. It's nice to have you here.
Yeah, good morning, Scott. Thank you for having us.
You bet. Also joining us here in the studio, Kenny Hibner is here. He is the director of the Department of Public Safety here at San Juan College. Kenny, welcome to KSJE.
Thank you, sir.
Good to have you here as well. And also Dave McCall is here from the San Juan County Sheriff's Office. Lieutenant McCall, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having us here.
Good to have you here as well. And thank you for being here, all of you. Mike, let me start with you by talking a bit about this drill that's coming up on the 7th of October. This is something that your office coordinates, I think, every year, right, with other entities in the county?
Yeah, that's correct, Scott. Annually, the San Juan County Office of Emergency Management coordinates the annual full-scale drill. We do it in conjunction with the Homeland Security Exercise Program, which accumulates with a three-year program building up to a full-scale drill. But in San Juan County, we do a full-scale drill annually just because we're so in tune to do it. Our first response agencies are on board. And we've got just a great team here in San Juan County.
And of course, the reason behind it is just so everyone kind of knows what everyone is doing, these different entities. We have, you know, three entities here in the studio with me this morning, but there's a lot of folks involved when there is some type of massive response type of situation, right?
Yeah, so the reason that we preliminarily do these drills is because we get Homeland Security equipment from the State Homeland Security Grant Program. They request that you do a drill with that equipment so that it just doesn't sit in the closet, per se. So to remain proficient with the equipment, they ask you to do an annual exercise or exercise every 3 years, but we just choose to do it here in San Juan County every year.
Right.
So then we bring on an exercise partner, either industry, but this year we've partnered with San Juan College, who has reached out to our office and asked to do an active shooter drill. To test some of the procedures and test our response agencies in response to the college.
Right, and so that's what the drill will be on the 7th, an active shooter simulation here at San Juan College. So let me bring in Kenny Hibner to talk a little bit more about that, and that is something I know as an employee of San Juan College, we are get talked to about every year as part of the training from the college, but this is something that the college is now pairing up with emergency management, sheriff's office, and others to kind of do this at a more larger scale, an actual kind of real-world type exercise?
Yes, it's a culmination of our first 5 years of our emergency operations plan. We walked through creation of the plan and training with staff and students on it, and then with the engagement of the county drill, we'll work on our interoperability with all of the different emergency responders in the area. Sheriff's Office, Farmington Police Department will be taking part, as well as Farmington Fire Department, San Juan County Fire Department, and I believe Aztec Police Department is also taking part as well.
Okay.
And many of those on campus are working with volunteering for the event in different areas, whether they are actors in it, observers, or support personnel for it, including our nursing department, our EMT program, and others.
Right. And the parts of campus that will be impacted by this, I know you're going to be putting out a lot more information and communications about what areas to avoid. Obviously, the whole college isn't going to be shut down that day, but parts of it will be to accommodate this drill, right, and to let folks know what's going on.
Right. So the primary two buildings that will be involved in the exercise will be our Educational Services Building, or our Clock Tower Building, as most people call it, and our Health Sciences Center. In addition to that, we'll have several parking lots that'll be closed for staging of the drill and operations during the drill. That'll be parking lot A and B on the south side of campus, and then working the loop around to parking lot C and F, which is the primary parking lot for the educational services building.
Right. And C, I think, if I'm remembering, is that the one on the other side of the health sciences building? Is that the other one that we're talking about?
Yes, right in front of the bookstore, for those of you who know where that is.
Gotcha. But the rest of the parking lots and the other buildings on campus would be open if there's other stuff going on that day. Is that the idea, right?
Yes, I know,
right?
There's events going on the other side of campus, but the Health and Human Performance Center has elected to close during the exercise because of their close proximity. But as far as I know, they'll be opening it up at noon that day.
Gotcha. And what do you hope folks on your staff and others here at the college get from this drill when they're a part of this? Because it's more departments than just public safety, correct?
Correct. We'll be working, our administration from the president down is taking part in the exercise, working through that high-level decision-making that would need to take place if this type of incident were ever to happen here. But we're also working with our as you mentioned, our Department of Public Safety to see how we integrate into the first responders and how we work with them. Parts of it is just getting to know each other and getting to recognize faces and things so that the first time we see some of these people isn't during an actual emergency. It's something that we're already aware of and worked with.
Sure. Makes a lot of sense. And Lieutenant McCall, I want to come to you too about the Sheriff's Office involvement in this drill and others in the region, of course, when they happen. But what's the Sheriff's Office going to be doing that day during this drill?
So first of all, I'd like to give credit where it's due. Corporal Mike Carey, he's really been the point man for the Sheriff's Office on all this. He couldn't be here today, but...
So he owes you a lunch or something?
Yeah,
probably.
I think I probably owe him a lot more than he owes me.
Okay, well, fair enough, but thanks for giving him credit.
Yeah, but he's come up with a scenario, and the value of an exercise like this is in the integration. We train, and the other agencies, law enforcement agencies, train individually, whether it's in a school or a church or whatever building we can find. But the real value is in what happens after, during and after, what most people think of as the law enforcement phase. You know, we're trained to go to the threat and either isolate it or neutralize it. But really, things just get going at that point. Without sounding too insensitive, you know, there's a phrase we use, stop the killing and then stop the dying. So the stop the dying part, you know, we've had a shift in the last few years in how we operate, and what we do now is we isolate the threat, but knowing that a lot of times there might be another threat in the building, but if we've got casualties, we need to take care of them. So part of the integration is finding casualty collection points, securing them quickly, and so that the EMTs and fire can come in and treat the people that have been hurt that haven't died.
Right.
And a lot of times that can even take place while teams are still looking for the threat. So, you know, the looking for the threat part is the part that we train a lot. But the rest of it, we don't have as many chances to integrate with fire and EMS and everybody else that's going to be involved. So this is a really good opportunity for us all to get on the same page and get some repetitions in doing that kind of stuff.
Sure. And I would say, too, that you only have to look as far as the news to see some of these incidents that are happening across the country and how important it is and how that response has been evolving over the last few years, right, of how you do respond to a mass casualty incident, a threat like that in a public place.
Sure. You know, this kind of hits close to home for me because, you know, not only have we had a couple of these locally, and I've been involved in both of them, but really where things started changing was Columbine.
Sure.
And I was actually moving to Farmington from Laramie, Wyoming that day, and I was listening to the radio while driving through Denver, listening to this happen live. And the way the law enforcement response was, up until then, was contain the area and then wait for a SWAT team. And, you know, things have really changed since then. Now, the first person that gets there is going to go straight to the threat. And, you know, the sooner we can get boots inside the building, the sooner we can stop tragedies from happening.
Right.
So rather than waiting minutes or hours or however long it takes, things are going to get isolated a lot sooner.
Sure.
Now.
And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, any one of you, but I think we saw a lot of this coordination maybe from some past mass casualty drills on May 15th here in Farmington with some of the responses that we saw of the shooting incident here. Is that a correct statement?
Yeah. Yeah. That was an interesting one. Usually when you think about a mass casualty incident, you think about a school. But this one happened just in a neighborhood. But the same principles apply. You know, everybody comes together and things get handled.
Right. And we had multiple agencies coming together on that day as well as I recall.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And Mike Mestis, back to you a little bit about these drills again that maybe help some of these different agencies, you know, working together, knowing who's in charge or putting names with faces and things like that, because I would assume sometimes they don't always have an opportunity to work with these other agencies, but at a drill like this, they do, and that's the point.
Yes, sure. And going back to what Lieutenant was talking about, what happened in May,
yes.
Chief Heavy credited our annual drills and exercises for our agencies all working together and not meeting each other for the first time during a multi-casualty incident. So you're correct. These drills help. They help with procedures and help with incident command and the flow of things. And we feel here in San Juan County, unfortunately, we've had a few incidents. But if not for the coordination and the training that we've done in the past, it could have been a whole lot worse.
Right. I would tend to agree with that. And I know you and I, Mike Messes, have talked in the past about other scenarios around these drills. Some involve maybe an energy company, oil and gas, pipeline, things like that. I mean, they shift from year to year, and you all come up with these scenarios, right, based on the partners that want to work with you or what you feel needs some attention. How does that work, that decision?
So you are correct. Annually, we reach out to the community, and number one, we see who wants to sponsor our annual exercise. And for the past few years, we've been working with industry because oil and gas in our community is a potential critical infrastructure threat. This last year, Kenny reached out to my office and said, "Hey, we haven't done a drill at the college in some time. We'd like to test out some procedures and make sure that we're ready. Heaven forbid." Prevention is the key, and for him doing that, kudos to him for reaching out.
Right.
So therefore, we'll bring in the response agencies. We didn't mention the EMS from the ambulance from the hospital as well. We'll be playing. The hospital won't be participating this year because usually we take patients down to the hospital, but they've already had their active threat training this year, so they're going to come and observe. But we are also bringing in Homeland Security from the state to observe. They'll be doing some role-playing, testing our communication procedures. The sky's the limit, so everybody that wants to play, we usually try to bring them out.
Right, very true. Kenny Hibner, I want to come back to you and ask you a bit about, I know the trainings that happen here at San Juan College for faculty and staff every year, and some of the things that have kind of evolved, as Lieutenant McCall was saying, about the response to a threat in a building, in a public building, in a school, for example, or a college, or things like that. I think that's been reflected in the training that we take as workers here at the college as well. Isn't that the point?
Yes. As he mentioned, Columbine really changed the landscape of response for these types of incidents. So we try to train towards what that response will be and what those that are involved in a shooting should expect. It's not about taking hostages and making a point anymore. It's someone out there trying to kill as many people as they can before they're stopped. So our training reflects how to survive until law enforcement gets there. And then within that training as well is what happens immediately after. What can you expect from a law enforcement response?
Right.
And training everyone so that no one gets hurt, that does the wrong thing during a a response from law enforcement, and then also knowing where on campus they can go for basically our run, hide, fight training. If you can run away from an active shooter, please do. If you can't, please hide where possible, and then as a last resort, fight and do what it takes to survive until law enforcement arrives.
Right. And the college, I just want to point out, and maybe you can too, has invested, I think, a lot of dollars and time and resources into security, locks and doors, I'm thinking, upgraded entry points and things along that line. That's been a multi-year project, correct, that your department's been working on?
Correct. Almost from the day I got here, I spoke with our executive vice president, Edward Desplas, who also had recognized that there were some weak points in our infrastructure here at the college. So he immediately jumped on looking to fix that with us. So we've replaced all door hardware on classrooms so that those can be locked from the inside in case of an incident. We've upgraded our emergency, or our electronic access systems. We've invested about $2 million over the last few years with his support into upgrading our electronic access and camera surveillance systems. So we just finished our largest phase in June, so we're working through the integration of it into our softwares.
Right. And that's a lot of money. I was going to ask you how much it costs, but you told me. But when you talk about upgrading locks and things like that, I mean, we're talking, I don't know, thousands of doors. I don't know how many exterior doors, but there's a lot, right, to be able to do that. And how many extra cameras now are going to be added for security and things like that, just, I think, trying to monitor the doors?
Yes, it's for cameras, a rough count. When we started this, we had about 7 cameras on campus. Currently, we have about 220 different lenses around campus that we're able to view different areas of the campus on. These are all public areas, hallways, exterior parking lots, and common areas inside of buildings that we're able to do. As you mentioned, there's thousands of doors on campus, and each one of those has been touched in some way with the upgrades to our security systems.
Right. And I know all that also runs in concert with some of the notification technology too, that folks are invited to sign up for. I know students and staff are to sign up for the college's notification systems. If there were an event on campus and you weren't even on campus but driving to campus, you could be notified, so you could just turn around and just wait it out until it's safe to come on campus or whatever the case may be.
Yes, we ask everyone to sign up for our SUNS alerts. That's through our Everbridge network. It can be found either on the Apple Store or the Google Play Store. Just search for Everbridge, and from there, follow directions to set up for San Juan College. But if anyone was setting up and had any issues, please reach out to my office, and we're happy to walk you through the program on that.
Very good. Thanks, Kenny. I appreciate you being here to talk about some of these things. Lieutenant McCall, I want to come back to you a little bit about the use of maybe cameras in law enforcement and things along that line. It seems like that's kind of the wave of the future, whether it's a traffic camera or a camera at a building or things along that line. Does that play a bigger role in some of the sheriff's investigations, too? I would think it does.
Oh, it does. It does. And we're excited about the cameras here. Using the technology that is in the building to direct us to where we need to go.
In case of a threat, in case of an incident, right?
Yeah,
you would know exactly which building you need to be at.
Yeah, so that's going to be huge, and it's going to drastically, I'd imagine, it's going to drastically cut down the time that it's going to take to find the threat. Another big thing that the college has done here is they've given law enforcement access to every door on the campus. When we were at the Aztec High School, the school doors are tough. They're hard to breach. Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
yeah.
And we had to get in every single door in those buildings in Aztec, and that was a real strain. But now, we got instant access. There's so many leaps and bounds that have been made here. They're just really gonna help out if there is a real incident.
Great to know. Very good. Well, thank you all for coming in and talking about this drill coming up. Again, it's October the 7th, mostly in the morning, Mike Mestis. Is that when this will be taking place? What time do you think things will be happening here?
Yeah, citizens should expect to see units arriving and staging around 7. The drill will kick off around 8 a.m. Should last till around noon. We won't affect the soccer field, so we'll be staying away from the northern part of the campus and staging units on the south parking lot. Trying not to upset disruption or anything of the college. Again, it's a Saturday, so the clock tower won't be having anybody in it. So
right.
Neither will the health sciences office as well. So limited disruption and getting the job done for our first responders and for the college.
Very good. Very good. Well, thank you all for coming in this morning. But before we go, Mike, I wanted to ask you a little update. We were talking before we came on the air this morning about the incident at Bloomfield with the irrigation district and what's been going on there. I know, again, your office has been pretty instrumental in trying to get some resources to make some repairs, but it's a pretty massive incident, right? Can you get us an update?
Yeah, sure. So not that we're busy enough already, planning drills and training and everything, but then we have to deal unfortunately with some disasters that fall upon us. So on September 5th, the Bloomfield Irrigation Ditch, which is a 42-mile long ditch that serves San Juan County from Navajo Dam all the way down to McGee Park, breached about a 600-foot section of a siphon. So the importance of that is that water ditch serves the city of Bloomfield and their drinking water reservoir. So it's already been about 3 weeks that it's been broken. There's limited storage in their reservoir, so it's a real dire emergency. Went before a county commission on Tuesday afternoon, declared a state of emergency on behalf of Bloomfield Irrigation District and the city of Bloomfield. So that'll bring in some governor state funding after the governor signs the declaration, so we can help them start to recover. It's a reimbursement program, a 75% reimbursement, but this way it doesn't bankrupt the Bloomfield Irrigation District and they can get some funding to help them repair.
Right. And you've identified, or not you personally, but the Irrigation District has identified some parts needed to make these repairs, right, in nearby in Texas. So that's one thing that's happening, and then just getting it here is the next step, I guess, right?
Yeah, so the main thing is to... Obviously, they've done the dirt work and the excavation, but yes, bringing in brand new pipe. Last night at a public meeting, they said that 1944 was the year that section of irrigation pipe was put in. So obviously, yeah, and it was an old concrete pieced together in sections. So they're bringing in some polyurethane pipes. That'll be a whole lot better, a lot more sturdier. They're having to bring in 6 semi flatbeds to bring that in, truck it from Texas. So. They're anticipating possibly another 3 weeks before projects can be completed. So, and that's based on if everything goes right.
Right. So, and I guess in the meantime, they are doing some dirt work to get access roads and things like that to this location, so the pipes can be delivered. And then the city, in the meantime, because it is a water supply line for the city, they're able to pump some water out of the river, you were telling me, but they've asked residents, I think, to conserve as well, right, during the meantime.
Yeah, you are correct. There's a community effort. The city of Bloomfield has also got a stake in it. They've sent trucks and excavators. Sunland Construction is working on site as well as Bloomfield Irrigation District to build access roads to access the siphon. And yeah, because you can imagine it's just an irrigation line out in the middle of nowhere built in the 40s. So they've had to actually build roads to get into it, roads to get down to it to start the repair work. But in the interim, as we stated that the city of Bloomfield has limited storage, they have a second and a third source. So they're able to pump water out of the San Juan River to supplement their water treatment plant. But the downfall to that is they can't pump during the rains, and we've just had recent rains.
Right.
But they do have a third source. We do have a water line that comes from the city of Aztec that can supplement. And that was instrumental during the Gold King mine, so naturally that was brought up. The additional
going the other way, though, from Bloomfield to Aztec, right? Because
correct.
Aztec couldn't pull out of the Animas, so that was why that
so
was...
So now they're reciprocating, and
yeah.
We'll be able to share water if they need it. So
very good. So things should be pretty okay at the moment.
Keeping fingers crossed, things are moving forward, and we'll continue to give you an update.
Okay, appreciate it. Again, gentlemen, thank you for coming in this morning. Good luck with the drill, and thank you for the work that you do to keep us all safe. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bet.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks, everyone. This is KSJE. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.